All right. Well, it is just after six, and respecting everyone's time, I will call this meeting to order and thank everyone for taking some time out of their busy midweek schedule. Just a little bit of refresher, especially for the new folks joining us. After last year's budget that went from REMO to the council, so everyone, as everyone knows, REMO doesn't actually pass the budget, makes recommendations to the councils who approve the budget. One of the changes that we kind of, when we got some feedback, was that there'd be an opportunity for councillors who are not on the advisory committee in to be able to kind of go through the presentation with Angela on the call and with other board members. And so that was, I thought, a fantastic idea, as did everyone on the board. So that is what we're doing now. And so I believe Alex is going to go through the presentation. And if you have questions, you can raise your hand and I will, I guess, stop Alex and call on you to ask your questions. So just use the raise hand function. There will be time at the end, so if you want to save your questions to the end, you can do that. But there'll definitely be time for people to ask their questions. So without further ado, Alex, over to you.
Great. Thank you for the introduction, Mayor Mitchell. I have a short presentation. I recognize that it's evening time and it's a very busy season. So it's a high level summary, and more than happy to answer questions as we go through. And I've now lost it. I believe I'm sharing my screen so you can see a presentation.
You are. Yep.
Yep.
Wonderful. Okay. As Mayor Mitchell has covered, we have a couple of things that we're going to go over this evening. First, we're going to look at the basic elements of the REMO budget. We're going to have a quick chat about a proposed change to the budget approval process in the actual REMO agreement. And then we're going to look at two models for allocating REMO resources. So we're hoping to give council members enough information that if your council has a particular perspective, you can give that to your advisory committee representatives before their meeting later this month or early March. The date's in the presentation. just a very cursory overview of REMO. To start with, there are sort of six areas that are the basic functions of our emergency management organization, which covers all of Lunenburg County. So we have planning work. This involves developing actual contingency plans that enmesh with local organizations as well as with the province. There's running training and exercises to make sure that municipal staff that have to work during emergency activations know the incident command system structure, and we do exercises so that we're familiar with our contingency plans. REMO also does a lot of work building relationships with community partners and stakeholders, making sure that we have a network of contacts built up so that when it becomes a need for us during an emergency, it's not the first time that this organization has heard from somebody in REMO. There's also a public outreach function, largely focused on comfort centers and the 72-hour preparedness work. There's some governance and administration because it's a shared service. And then obviously there's activating and responding to emergencies. On top of all that, our manager, Angela, does work on special projects as time allows. So some examples of this most recent one that we've been working on is finding suitable locations for evacuation shelters that have backup power and meet all of the specifications of the Red Cross. So as I mentioned, just a quick overview of what the base elements of REMO's budget are. More detailed information is in the package, but the summary is there is travel and training costs. This is both for Remo staff, but also to put on training for Remo staff and then travel between the five units and to community groups. We have personnel and office costs, so there are two positions included in this. We have administration and advertising costs, and then also communication systems, which include things like our Alert Ready subscription, TMR radios, which connect to the provincial system. Oops, there's a typo on the slide. I'm very sorry about that. Communications is spelled wrong. So radios, funding for the amateur radio equipment, and cell phones, info lines, and those kinds of things. And so the total proposed budget for the base budget is $326,900. We have been experiencing an increased demand for emergency response over the last several years. And this was actually a topic of discussion at our workshop on our strategic planning and governance earlier this year. Some of the causes for that are we are experiencing more frequent and more severe weather, which is impacting us as a result of our changing climate. We also are dealing with some increasing resident expectations. And in response to both of those factors, the provincial government has been making changes, and we're starting to get a sneak peek of what some of those new changes are. And unsurprisingly, there are some downloads included in that. We also have we work on continuous improvement in the organization. After every activation, our manager completes an after action report, which assesses our response and identifies items that we might want to change to improve our response and our contingency plans and future activations. So that generates a long list of recommendations that we work through to try and improve. We also have, and it's included in your package here, a self-assessment, which is what the province puts out for all emergency management, local emergency management groups, to assess their readiness. And so the last time that we conducted it, we found that we do have a basic program in place that meets provincial expectations, but we have gaps in terms of the type of service we'd like to provide to our residents and where we think the province is going. And one of the most significant areas, speaking of the after-action recommendations and the provincial self-assessment, is around having sufficient municipal staff who are trained to work in the Emergency Coordination Center when we have large-scale activations. So we expect that we will need somewhere in the order of 25 to 50 staff in order to staff multiple shifts for an activation. And we don't have those numbers now, depending on coverage. We're working through plans to bring in more municipal staff so that they have enough training to fill specific roles within that. And when we found during the 2023 flooding where we had a full activation, we were really stretched for staff. So people were pulling multiple shifts and filling positions where they didn't have full comfort. So we know that there's areas that we need to address. During the workshop in January with the advisory committee, we did a bit of review of these assumptions to make sure that the group was on the same page in terms of where we were. So covering off that we are experiencing increasing demand for emergency response, that we do need more resources allocated towards emergency management, and also that emergency response works best through regional collaboration. The primary benefits, for example, for us as a region is when we have to activate, we're able to pull on the staff resources from five different municipalities. So if there's absences, illnesses, vacations, those types of things, we're able to draw on a larger pool of staff and share resources. So now getting to more of the work of the advisory committee during the strategic planning retreat, it was identified that we had a concern with the approval process, which is set out in the emergency management agreement between the five units. So currently, The budget is considered passed for the organization when two units pass a motion approving it, as long as those two units share of the budget totals at least 51%. Now, this comes from the original agreement that was signed, and the ratios for approval weren't increased when the town of Lunenburg joined us in around 2017. And so the discussion at the workshop and then at the following REMO advisory committee meeting was that we increase the number of units required to approve the budget to three to make sure that there was a majority of units that were in favor of the budget before it became formally approved. And as Mayor Mitchell has pointed out, we're also working through an enhanced information sharing process. So the REMAC committee this year, and we plan to do it years going forward, reviews a draft budget and provides a presentation like this to all councils. So there's an opportunity for councils to discuss it with their reps if necessary before it comes back to the advisory committee, who then make the recommendation to partner councils. Another theme that came up from the strategic planning workshop was a strong desire to increase the amount of local pre-planning work that's happening.
Sorry to mind if I stop you there, Alex. Wendy had her hand up.
Oh, yes, sure.
So I looked over the costing and the shared. It's 49.6 for the District of Lunenburg. In order... I'm just concerned, not, you know, and I am with the District of Lunenburg, but in order for three units to pass anything at 51%, the District of Lunenburg has to agree. Because if you add up all the other units, any three of them, none of them will come to 51%. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. Yes.
Right. So, like, what I'm saying is then that the District of Lunenburg, by your formula, has the majority vote no matter what, you know, like if so that if everybody else wants to do it but we don't, it still won't get done. Yeah, so I'm just wondering, you know, you might want to.
Yes.
Know, we might. Sorry.
No, don't apologize, Councillor Orgel. That's an excellent point. I believe I've been working with Excel sheets with different values. So the uniform assessment values change year over year. And the last sheet that I was working with rounded down. So it was MODL was 49%. but the most recent year could very well be that, and it was we spoke about that at the advisory committee meeting that the intention was not to provide the District of Lunenburg with essentially a veto role, and so I think that's an excellent point to take away and bring back to the next advisory committee meeting to determine whether or not we need to reduce the percentage of budget approved. So that's not happening, because the original rationale for leaving it at 51% was any increase would result in the veto power, but that must have been an oversight with me checking on the rounding of my formulas.
I just wanted to be fair to everybody else, right?
No, it's a wonderful point, and I've made note of it so that we can address it at the next advisory committee meeting. Okay. So are my slides still visible?
They are. You're just not in presentation mode.
Okay. I only have a single screen, so I can't see anybody's questions or hands. So thank you for interrupting there, Mayor Mitchell.
No worries.
I'm now lost. Okay, there we go. So there was a lot of discussion around pre-planning. And then after the strategic planning session, units did provide some more examples of what some of this pre-planning might look like. So you can see on the screen a list of some of these examples. talking about strengthening local relationships and partnerships with key stakeholders. So this could either be with local fire departments and community halls or with larger facilities, thinking about Drumlin Hills, Shoreham Village, or larger industrial sites like Michelin or Maybeck. Local hazard mapping, including flood mapping and looking at specific evacuation routes for communities, was another example that was raised. Exploring evacuation shelter facilities within the district of Chester, because we have our current contingency plans are centered around the NSCC, and there is no facility identified that meets our criteria yet on the eastern side of the county. Additional support for training municipal staff who might get called up to serve in an activation center. Support for community groups and individuals who might be looking to adopt the FireSmart model for wildland fire protection. Presentations to community groups on 72-hour preparedness and what the municipalities do during an emergency. And so there were a couple of examples of different community groups that might be interested in receiving these. Looking for facilities that could house livestock and or pets during an emergency where evacuations are required, and helping comfort centers during activation, but also in advance of activations, making sure that they have facilities in place, funding, possibly grants and volunteers to run their shelters. It is worthwhile noting that of this list, these activities are already part of the core functions of REMO, but we have one staff person and a vacant position doing the work. So there's a desire to see more of this work happening. The only exception to that is we aren't currently working as a regional organization on improving flood mapping, hazard identification, and evacuation route planning. But the rest of the work is happening at some level. So with that little explanation of local pre-planning work, we're going to look at two different models for providing emergency management. So the first option is based on the current approach, which has two staff people who are employed by REMO. So that will be our manager position, and then the vacant coordinator position will be filled, but given an office space based out of the district of Chester. You would still need the support of the CAO group, who help with training exercises and activations, and your AECs, which are assistant emergency coordinators. So these are municipal staff who have other full-time jobs, but are designated as assistants for the purposes of emergency management. And their primary function is to participate in monthly exercises. They are also on call on a rotation over a six-week period with the emergency management phone. And then obviously they participate when we do have to activate for an emergency. And then this model also includes the need for additional municipal staff who are trained to take on specific roles within the activation center. So the second option involves more local resources. So this model, in comparison, you can see there's only one central person employed by REMO. You still have the CAO group, and you still have additional trained municipal staff. But instead of the group of full-time staff in municipalities that have a small designation for emergency management, you'd be looking at emergency coordinators embedded in the municipal units themselves. And so under this example model, it has a District of Chester hiring one, the District of Lunenburg hiring one, and then a third one being shared between the three towns. So that would result in, as opposed to two full-time equivalents dedicated to emergency management, you would have four. So this is a quick summary of what an example budget would look like under those two options. Because of the difference in staffing, you can see that there is a higher cost for the second option. But it's important that these costs are considered in the larger context of municipal government and what we're trying to achieve. So we're going to spend a little bit of time summarizing some of the discussion that's happened at the advisory committee meeting on some of the pros and cons of the two options. So under the sort of status quo or the base model, this approach by having the regional manager and the coordinator position filled helps with a major concern that we had the previous fiscal year, which was not having the backup or redundancy for the regional manager. It's also less costly than option two. The drawbacks of this approach is only having two dedicated staff who are professionals in emergency management, and the rest of the people involved, including your CAOs, are people that are doing this off the side of their desk. So necessarily this means less expertise. It also means less time available for that pre-planning work. And it means that we have a higher reliance on your CAO group for taking more leadership and professional roles within the Emergency Coordination Center. So the second option that has the emergency coordinators embedded in local municipalities has the benefit of creating that team of four professional dedicated emergency management staff, which can in turn then reduce the reliance on CAOs and other municipal staff, particularly during smaller activations. So the more common activations, just this past weekend, we had the ice storms, and that didn't necessitate a full activation on our part. In fact, we were just at the active monitoring stage for that. And more common for us are having the smaller partial activations, where we'll have a group of three to four staff people who are filling roles in a partially activated coordination center. And so in these scenarios, there's less need for CAOs to be taking on these roles. So their time is not as taken up by emergency management. There is still need for them to be involved in the training and exercises so that they're aware of what the contingencies plans are and what their roles will be during a full activation. But it's certainly a benefit of the second option. And obviously there is more time available in the second option, having more resources to get at some of those special projects, whether it's looking at new work that we'd like to get to, like developing volunteer rosters, and looking at the vulnerable sector registry issue, vulnerable persons registry issue. The downsides of this option is that it is more costly. It does require a slightly more complex funding model because you have individual units contributing resources, and then you need a formula to break up both the regional costs as well as those local costs that are contributed back to the regional model. And then the management can be challenging in some circumstances where you have the decentralized approach. The coordinators then are getting direction and requests for support, both from the local units and from the regional organization. So that was a very quick summary of the information that was in your package and what has been discussed over the last several months at the advisory committee meeting. The next steps that we're looking at is individual councils are certainly free to have discussions on this material leading up to the advisory committee meeting, which will be held on March 12th, where the committee will be making a recommendation to councils on what the REMO budget will be for the upcoming fiscal year. And then we're looking, depending on your council's meeting schedule, late March to early April for final approval of the budget.
Thank you, Alex. We'll open the floor to questions. And just, I'm think everyone knows this. I can't remember if you talked about it in your presentation or not, Alex, but option one is essentially what we approved last year. And we just didn't, you know, that position was filled and then the person didn't work out. But when we look at option one, sounds like it's new, but it's currently what we had on the books for last year as well, just in case some yep. folks didn't know that yet.
Yeah, that's a fair statement.
So we got lots of people here. So, Wendy, you're up.
Thank you. So I'm wondering, is there a specific reason why you didn't go to two coordinators instead of from one to three? You went from one, you skipped mm-hmm. two as an mm-hmm. option. Is there a specific reason for that?
Yes. Yeah, actually, for a little bit of history, in the lead up to last year's budget, we looked at two budget options, one being the addition of one coordinator function embedded in the REMO organization, and another option that would have had two, but all of those positions were all that we had considered was housing them within REMO. Chester raised some concerns and identified that we hadn't had a discussion about if we are going to be adding resources, is there merit in thinking about would they make more sense embedded within the municipalities or embedded within the REMO organization itself? So that was a primary topic of conversation. In order for there to be some level of advantage to each unit, we felt that a minimum of three would be required. Even with three, the way that we've laid it out in the example model is you have the two larger rural units hosting one each and then the town sharing. So that one individual is going to have to try and embed themselves in three organizations. The sort of full-fledged model on that approach would actually be five, where you embed somebody in each unit, but there's some real sticker shock with that.
Thanks. Pam?
Yeah, I see an option too that you said the model of management could be challenging. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Like, if you yeah. have more people, I wouldn't think it would be as challenging.
Just the challenge we wanted to highlight there is that it can become tricky for a staff person who essentially has more than one manager. So they would have some responsibility to meet the objectives set out for them by the REMO manager, but they would also have a supervisor within the municipality. It's absolutely not insurmountable. And we have, I can think of examples within our own municipality where we make that work, but it is more challenging for that individual.
Oh, now that you say that, I think I actually read that in the package. Sorry.
Okay. No problem. If you had the question, I'm sure others did too.
Other questions?
Actually, is there a recommendation, Alex?
So the advisory committee doesn't have a recommendation at this point. What they had committed to was that we wanted to make sure that councils had enough information available. So the advisory committee has seen this in report form once in January or early February. I'm sorry, my dates are all mixed up. And then we had some robust discussion that led to the options that were in that report in January. They haven't made a recommendation about it. I think that the key issues focused on here are you get more resources by pursuing the option two that has resources embedded in there. There was also lots of discussion on the fact that our model now currently, and this is the model across Nova Scotia. We did some double checking to make sure that was the case, but the model for emergency management in Nova Scotia relies on folks that aren't emergency management experts to take on critical roles in the Emergency Coordination Center. So when we activate, we have directors of planning and deputy CAOs and CAOs and managers of engineering shops who are fulfilling jobs like safety officer and coordination center manager and director of operations. And so those are not our full-time jobs. And we rely heavily on the advice of Angela, who's our only employee who's dedicated to that. So that's a real benefit of the second model.
But even in Halifax, the CAO is in the coordination center, correct? Like CAOs, like you said, it's that model, option one, really, is essentially what the vast majority of municipalities do. And is there not some legislation that requires the CAOs to be present or connected to the ECC anyway?
There's nothing specifically in legislation. The legislation requires you to have a program and it requires you to have a coordinator. But it doesn't get more specific than that. But you are correct. We went back to make sure, checking with the province, because some of us, myself included, were under the impression that that wasn't the case with the very large regional municipalities. Mm-hmm. But the province did confirm that the CAOs do retain that final authority there. It is a different model because they're not a regional group and they have more integrated emergency response. So in our situation, a lot of our first responders are not part of our organization. And when you get to the rural level here where we're contracting with the RCMP, we have relationships with volunteer fire departments. We have no direct relationship with EHS. It's a lot of coordination as opposed to that direct control that you might have with a larger regional municipality. So the advisory committee has had a lot of discussion about this, and there's some very clear advantages to the second option. Major disadvantage being the cost associated with it. But there are also concerns around, how exactly do you make that coordinator role work for the three towns in a way that's meaningful? And is this a step that the organization is ready to take? Or is it more incremental change that the organization and its partner councils are interested in, where we make the local coordinator and the regional coordinator and manager work? And then if we still find we're not getting to those pre-planning activities, do we then move on and convert that position into, for example, an embedded position within Chester and bring on two more coordinators?
So I just sharing Bridgewater's perspective. So that's where we are leaning, is we don't know if option one is sufficient or not. So because we haven't tried it. So jumping to option two seems premature. Certainly very much respected Chester's concerns of if all the staff are centralized, then as one municipality that's on one end of the region, there's a bit of a disconnect. And so I think it was unanimous around the table that it made sense that if we went to option one, that second person be located in Chester to hopefully alleviate some of those concerns. But I know at the last board meeting, throughout our discussion, certainly my sense was that most, not all, but most of the municipalities felt that trying option one at least for a year before saying that option one isn't good enough and jumping to option two was worth exploring. So certainly from Bridgewater's perspective, it would be try option one first. Jamie.
Yeah, basically echoing Mayor Mitchell's comments. We haven't really discussed it at this council, but I know last council had passed option one because they thought it was something we should try. And I personally feel we should try option one first. If it doesn't work, we don't think it's, working the way we hoped, then maybe go to option two. I just think the jump, for example, I'll use our numbers, to double the cost, to go right to option two without trying option one, I think to me is a little premature, number one. And I certainly respect Chester's opinion as well. And if we do hire a second person, they would be located in Chester, I think, and that sort of evens that out a bit. But again, I'd like to just echo that I think option one's worth trying first before we go to option two. And if, I mean, even halfway through the year, if something major happens, I'm sure we can all go back to our councils and say, hey, this isn't working. But ultimately, from what I've heard, is the CAO of the municipalities are going to be in charge of that command center anyways, because they're ultimately in charge of all staff. So just because we hire a dedicated REMO person or whatever, doesn't mean the CAOs don't have to be there. They still have to be present and they still have to be responsible. So I think that was a big concern. So I don't think that's going to alleviate that concern. They're still ultimately in charge.
Thanks, Jimmy. Wendy.
I'm wondering, with those extra people, 75% of their time is going to be mostly with community work, and 25% of their time is actually in training and on call and activation work. So do we actually need a trained person to be in charge of all the community work? Could we not have somebody who that is their job to do community work? Because that is important, because our residents do need to know and feel confident for themselves, as well as that their individual municipalities know what they're doing.
Yeah, an interesting point there, Councillor Oikel. The rationale behind it is, in emergency management, there's sort of two kinds of days. There's clear sky days and the holy crud days. So as you saw in the introductory section, there's about six areas and only one of them is the holy crud days. The other five are our regional managers currently doing things like giving presentations to community groups, helping individuals that want to start a comfort center, that type of thing. So the model, a benefit of it is that you are hiring folks that are experts in the field, that they know emergency management. And you're right, that's not necessary to give a presentation on how to build an evacuation to-go bag or to make your home a place that you can live happily for 72 hours without power or access to a grocery store and a gas station. But you want to have that available for the holy crud days.
Elspeth.
I just, in listening to the conversation, and also knowing that the province is organizing in a much more significant way their resources or lack of resources, I'm not sure how to speak to that, but around a regional approach to emergency management, we already have that structure in place. And I wonder how, if we have any sense of what direction we may be getting from the province, because they're, you know, the tendency is to download things to us. And I wonder if we have any sense of what that might look like, and making decisions about how we move forward on expanding staff may be challenging given that we're not overly knowledgeable. I stand to be corrected on that, but about what it might look like as the province organizes a more robust emergency measure strategy.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. There's we have certainty that they're going to expect more from municipal emergency response. We don't have nearly any certainty about what shape that's going to look like. So We received a letter from the minister responsible for emergency management in the last 60 days, I believe, and it set out some new expectations. They weren't in legislation, but it's an expectation that the province is setting, and we are in a position because, frankly, because Angela is an excellent manager and has moved our program along significantly since she came on board in 2019. So, for example, the public info line that they're asking all municipalities to have available, that's something that we had in the works since our experience after the 2023 floods. But their expectation around municipalities being able to respond to residents inquiries about things like snow clearing and ferrying medication to them, even perhaps before the 72-hour period has expired, will really overwhelm us. And I think that we're in one of the stronger positions across the province. So we expect there to be more communication like that. We expect there to be pushback from the Federation of Nova Scotia Municipalities because it will be a download, and we don't really know where they're going to land.
Thanks, Alex. Other questions? Want to make sure people have an opportunity.
No, I guess I don't. No, changed my mind.
Okay, Jamie.
I'd just like to thank Alex. I think this is the third time I've seen this presentation. So again, I'd just like to thank Alex for all his work and effort he's put into this. I'm sure for Alex, it's just getting kind of repetitive and long. But again, thank you very much. I think this was needed for our colleagues and council that don't serve on the committee. So thank you so much, Alex. And it's greatly appreciated from the town of Lunenburg.
No, it's my pleasure. It's not repetitive at all. It's an important discussion.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jamie. I agree. Suzanne.
Oh, hi. Thanks, too. Yes, Alex. It's good to have this repeated again. I'm just wondering if anyone from Chester is on. I didn't see anybody was on that. They could sort of refresh some of their concerns for those who aren't regular members at meetings. Is there anyone from Chester?
Yeah, we have some folks from Chester here.
Okay. Oh, I see them. They're in a group.
There you go.
Okay, hi. Great.
Yep, go ahead. We can hear.
Okay. Well, I can summarize this with a few points, I think. One is in an emergency. We'll speak about that first. We rely on our trained professional people to man these command centers, but realistically, they have duties that extend far beyond responding to emergencies, don't they? And it's a lot of pressure and burden to put on a CAO or deputy or whoever it is that we volunteer to do that job. And there's a question of whether that's actually an appropriate use of that resource. You know, oftentimes, say in our municipality, if we were to have an emergency, I think our CAO would be quite busy dealing with other operational things. So we would rely then on the efforts of others. And we've had some situations in the past, not too many, luckily, but we've had a few activations in the past where through our partnership, some of the others weren't as present as maybe we might have expected. So that is to say, not all units contributed in the same way when actually it was time to respond. And that that itself is a problem of, I guess, the unexpected nature of not having the people there that you expect to have there. And then in the formula that you use to calculate, or has been used to calculate this, it shows like five CAOs at 0.5 FTEs and six AECs, but actually that's not at all what is contributed towards this organization, is it? You know, Chester contributes more than one AEC, that we contribute others. Modal does as well, you know, and there are other units that don't contribute very much at all. So there's an underlying problem of fairness here, because should, I don't know, RPS in Mahone Bay blow up, you know, they would expect all their municipal neighbors to come and descend on them like locusts to help manage that emergency. And likewise, if we were to have an emergency and we were busy handling the operational aspects of, you know, whatever it was, we would hope that our municipal partners would do the same. That hasn't been the case. And in terms of our actual contributions, we're not directly doing it. It's all side of the desk by people that are doing other real jobs. Each unit is actually just sort of picking and choosing what they want to contribute. Some contribute their CAOs, others contribute their deputies, others contribute other people. And there is actually, in our agreement, it's very outdated. It doesn't actually reflect what's being contributed. And so we're trying to build this structure around this one paid individual at this point, and we're talking about maybe a second, that's sort of in some way managing all of these side of the desk people from an assortment of units that are all contributing different amounts of manpower. And that's the model that we're tasked to evaluate, as compared with trying to have paid individuals at least as a baseline of emergency response, and then supplementing that with maybe some side of the desk sort of folks. So, you know, I don't think that when you think about the cost comparison, it's not actually accurate at all, because it doesn't include Aaron Lowe, it doesn't include Mark Flint, it doesn't include Eric Wynott, it doesn't include Jennifer Weber in those costs. There could be others. That's just what I jotted down during this presentation. So it's not so simple in terms of dollars and cents to look at it that way. And then if we were to pursue option one, I think then we need to sit down and really have a real heart-to-heart discussion about what it is that we're bringing each one of us as units. Because we have it's a very clear-cut way of looking at, you know, in terms of contributing dollars. That's easy. You know, it's by assessment. We all contribute a certain amount. But when it comes to bodies, it seems each one of our units is deciding to deliver what they want to deliver as much of a priority as they feel that ZRIMO is to their organization. And I don't think that has been fully felt out. And I don't think that we've really had a real honest and earnest discussion about what it is that we expect from one another. So I guess those are some sort of baseline sort of points. I'm sure there's more. But this runs a lot deeper than dollars and cents, I think. It's really a question of the structure of our ZRIMO organization. So that's it. Andre out.
I think that Councillor Vino has really raised some excellent points there around how we identify staff who are available for training, exercises, and then for activations. And it has very much been on a voluntary basis. And I think the awareness amongst the senior leadership of our municipalities has been growing since 2019, that the number of staff that we're contributing has been low. And we need to be able to ramp up much quicker when we are forced to activate for anything larger than a small partial activation. So regardless of the model that you pursue, that's going to unfortunately be a conversation. Well, not unfortunately, I'm excited for it. It's a conversation you're going to need to have at the REMAC table and at your CAO group level.
If I can just add, Andre's correct that when we had an incident, we had a CAO at one of the member units that didn't want to go into the take a shift. My understanding from that municipal unit is that they're aware of that and that's not going to happen again. That CAO isn't around the table anymore because that was an issue that was raised at previous meetings. I think it's also worth noting that when there is a full activation, even with option two, there's not enough. Like, there will be other staff. Alex, I can't remember how many people you said need to be in the room when there's a full activation, but no matter what we do, there will be CAOs in the room at some point.
Yep. Yeah, minimum of 24 to fully staff, to staff to the level that we think we need for three shifts. So that you can then have a rotating cycle. But the number is likely higher if you're getting into extended activation over a number of days.
Rachel.
Hi. And further to what Andre was saying, I'm not clear on what complement of staff is needed from each unit at any given time or any given type of activation. And is there a way to report on that so that member counselors of member units have an understanding of what the expectation is? Because I honestly perhaps should know, but at this point really don't know.
So. Yep. Yeah, so I can just give you the shorthand. If we're in an active monitoring phase, then technically we only have two staff involved, but sometimes we draw in more and we have regular teams meetings amongst the units to make sure that we're all aware and engaged. If we switch up to partial activation, then you're looking at somewhere between 3 and 5. And when you get into the full activation, so that's like you're looking at having to do evacuations, local states of emergencies, multiple requests for additional resources, then you're needing to fill out much more of the formal structure of what's called ICS or Incident Command System. So that in our contingency plans runs between 7 and 10 staff members per shift. If you're in that state, you're going to need multiple shifts a day. So that's how we get to the number of somewhere between 24 and 50. That top end number of staff needed is assuming that the Red Cross isn't going to be able to provide the support that they're expected to provide when you have to open up an evacuation shelter. We know that their volunteer numbers are low. That top end number means we're staffing our emergency coordination center for multiple shifts, and we're also lending municipal support to make sure that the evacuation center where residents are being cared for also has enough people to run smoothly.
Someone from the Chester Council has their hand up.
It's me again. Sorry. I just wanted to bolt on to what I said. I forgot to touch on. So the decision to go with one additional coordinator was one that was debated 2 years ago. And as you brushed up against Alex, the decision was to go forward with one because at the time there was a feeling that the political appetite wasn't there to hire two. And I believe at the time the consensus was that one additional position would just keep the lights on, that it wasn't going to deal with all of public preparedness projects that we needed to undertake to ensure that our residents are going to be best managed in an emergency and kept safe, and also manage their expectations. And we have a list. I know you had that list that you touched on in your presentation several slides back, mm-hmm. of projects. And, you know, I'm really struggling to understand how how we've changed our thinking, that somehow when we originally were going to add one position, they were just going to be able to kind of maintain the status quo. I have it on video. I've seen the videos where we've talked about this additional person and how it was just going to maintain the status quo. And now this one person somehow is going to be able to put a dent in all these projects. And, I don't have an answer for that. I guess it's an open question of how we expect that one individual person is going to actually meet our expectations for preparing the public.
Yes, Councillor Vino, I think that's a valuable point to raise. The distinction is around filling out what we expect for our activations, looking at the self-assessment that we've done. So addressing things like the activation gap, training, doing some of the local pre-planning work. But you're totally correct. We don't believe that that's going to get us enough resources to properly do a vulnerable persons registry locally, for example. And it will be slow going trying to tackle volunteer roster, particularly with our experience in the last fiscal year. We did plan, part of the reason why it was more of a keep the lights on model is that we planned a long period of training and onboarding for that position, because we know that the field of emergency management is relatively new, and most hires mean that the direction you have to take is it takes someone green who's actually studied in the field but might not have very much experience, or you take somebody from a first responder field such as fire, who has excellent tactical on the ground knowledge but not necessarily a great understanding of what our role is as a municipality in a coordination center. So part of the thinking around keeping the lights on is that we recognize it's going to be a slow build-up process.
Okay, Rachel.
Thanks. Sorry to belabor this, but just with respect again to the commitments from the partnering municipal units and their commitment of staff complement, in those numbers of that are required, I guess I'm struggling to still understand from the town of Lunenburg, for example, what complement of that 24 to 50 or of that two at any given time is expected from our community. We have, you know, we don't have a staff of 50. So we don't have a staff of 35 at the moment. So it's what proportionately what is expected. So we have to be realistic as to what we can actually provide.
Yeah, that's a great clarification to be asking, Councillor Bailey. I think the minimum expectation is that there is someone from the CAO group, which could include a deputy CAO or a CAO, and there is a minimum of one person fulfilling an assist emergency coordinator role. Now, what we've come to understand is that that's not enough to staff a full activation. And so we've been going voluntarily through our units, identifying folks such as our communication staff people who have formed a public information officer working group. And they work amongst themselves to keep information flowing out. We've identified different staff within different municipalities who have different skill sets, but the primary the primary criteria right now is the level of enthusiasm coming from the CAO group in terms of finding volunteers and voluntolds, and then some enthusiasm from the individual staff themselves who are interested in taking on that kind of function because they have an aptitude for it or some kind of volunteer experience that lends them towards it, or they like being in busy places where exciting things are happening.
Tom.
Sorry. Thank you, Chair. I wanted to bring maybe a little bit of a different perspective. Back in 2023, when we had the floods, the municipality, the District of Lüneburg, I couldn't be in the ECC managing it because we were declaring a state of local emergency, and I had to work with my council to pass the necessary motions to make the evacuation, you know, quote unquote, legal. And a different CAO had to take the ECC and operate it to make all the arrangements that were necessary to put the evacuation in place. So one of the lessons we learned coming out of that emergency was that sometimes you need more than one CAO in that room because, you know, one CAO or another could be pulled into having to deal with their council in declaring state of local emergency, passing the proper, you know, the motions have to be passed, the minutes have to be prepared, the minutes have to be confirmed. And there's a lot of administrative work that has to be done. And this, although, you know, not all municipal units are the same, but generally the CAOs all understand how to operate a municipal unit. And we all have training on how to operate the ECC. And while it's much more specific, you know, we do the best that we can, and we rely upon each other, the CAO group and including the deputy CAOs, to ensure that we can try to get the number of staff from each unit to be in that room when we need them so that we can continue to move it forward. And it's not really about so many from each individual unit. It's gathering up the people that we need to support the work that has to be done. As Alex indicated, the structure has positions built into it, and we determine based upon what we're dealing with which of those positions really need to be filled, and then we take from the group that we have and we fill them. And then when we have to rotate into another group, we try to make sure that there's enough people coming in to continue to fill those positions. Then there's a pass off between the positions. So it's incredibly important that our municipal staff are familiar with the operations. And so another thing that came out of the July 23 floods was that we made a form of training available for all of MODL staff. And we didn't train them up to the 200 or the 300 level, but we did ensure, and Angela in particular made sure, that any municipal staff person from any unit had the opportunity to attend these sessions to create a level of comfort so that when we put out the call for staff to come in and assist, they're not walking in blind. They do have some level of understanding and knowledge on what they're going to be asked to do in that, you know, rather unique situation. So it really is about drawing from the largest team that we can, and the regional approach really is the only way that we can effectively make that happen.
Thanks. For sharing that, Tom. Penny.
Thank you. So I'm just wondering about the opportunity or possible opportunity of people from outside our partnership being involved or in assisting or adding to our person power. I realize they wouldn't have the close local knowledge, but they do have they would have the expertise in emergency management. And would that just confuse the issue? Are external resources available to pull in from nearby jurisdictions or with cross training beforehand?
Yes, one of the benefits of using the ICS or Incident Command System structure is that it's replicated across most of North America. So in a major incident, we would likely be looking for that kind of support. And we have, in fact, provided that support in the other direction. So some of our emergency management staff, as well as our firefighters and some municipal staff, either offered or went down and helped with the Shelburne wildfires also in 2023. So it is something that could happen. We haven't done very much cross training. I know I have attended some training for REMO groups outside of our region to get a sense of how they operate and to make sure I have connections with them. And I know Angela is regularly involved with other coordinators across the province. So it's absolutely possible in a larger activation. It's not something that we've had to do, but we have done it the other way. Oh, and Angela is telling me that we're doing cross. Oh, yes, she and I are going to Truro for a week next week to do that type of cross training. I can't believe I forgot that.
Good. Thanks, Penny. I guess I'm going to circle back a little bit to the beginning where we kind of why we're having this meeting. And I'm going to go back to last year because I'm a little confused and I will, I'm a little bit frustrated. So I recognize that last year when we proposed the increase of staff to option, what is now option one, some councils felt like that was a foregone conclusion. There wasn't a lot of input sought from the councils. So it, you know, it was debated, discussed at the REMAC meeting, recommended to the councils. It went to the councils and then, it didn't come back to REMAC. So it just like one step from REMAC to the councils looking for approval. And the feedback from Chester, which was very, very valid, I do want to say that their concerns were right, that they felt that there was a bit of a disconnect. And so we did say we would change the process. We acknowledged it. We said we would change the process. Mm-hmm. So there was more back and forth. There was more time before the recommendation came from REMAC to the councils for the councils to get a presentation, to understand the changes and to provide their feedback. We also, if I think back again to last year, some of the concerns raised from Chester was around the cost, asking Chester for more money because of any increase to the two largest contributors of REMO would have a significant increase. Then it kind of shifted to the geography of, if we had that other person, where would they be? Because, again, we spoke about this earlier, the disconnect. And so we talked about if we're going with option one, it does make sense to have that person in Chester. And then at the last meeting, we talked about it was raised about the CAOs now, as being an issue, CAOs that didn't want to be in the AEC or the EAC, whatever the acronym is, I can't remember. And then tonight it now seems to be about staff contributions and how many staff are coming from each municipality. And my frustration is that I worry that we are going down a road where the target is now moving every time we meet. And it will be impossible for us as a regional entity to be on the same page because the page keeps flipping on us. So I don't want to dismiss the concerns people have. But at the same time, there has to be a little bit of an understanding that, if we keep every time we meet, we keep adding new issues, then this is doomed to fail. So I that's my frustration. I was trying to kind of sit here as the chair and keep my mouth shut, but some of the stuff we heard tonight is the first time it's ever been raised. And so the idea of tonight was not to bring up new concerns, out of what for me is out of the blue. It was to ask questions. And if there were some concerns, that's fair, but some of these are being raised by people who have been in multiple meetings and never raised them before. So how is there an expectation that Alex can give a presentation if he has no idea what some of the issues are. So, again, I don't want to dismiss people's concerns, but I just keep beating my head against the wall that, you know, if the target's going to continue to move, then I don't know what the point of having these meetings are, because we're never going to get consensus. That's my 2 cents on that. Elspeth, over to you.
There may be lots of reasons why there are issues that are being brought up, and that's, but I think it does, as maybe somebody that hasn't heard all the history, and just sitting listening to the comments that are coming up, it does point to some of the considerations that need to be made in the agreement that we have about how this organization works. And it may be some of the issues that are being raised aren't directly related to the budget, but they are more to the governance, the fairness, the equity of what we contribute. I think that and this was raised a little bit in fairness, a little bit at some of the other meetings, but I think that now that there has been a true emergency where everybody had to really ramp up and activate fully, the experience outlines where some of the weaknesses are. And that's what I think some of the conversation tonight points out, the manpower and woman power, person power needed to do this work if we are fully activated. And then there are the kind of, as I think Alex described it, the blue sky days where things are good and you can attend to other things. The issue around the governance and the voting and the budget approval process, that number one issue, that's one. But the issue about, and it was raised in the advisory committee meeting, if somebody doesn't show up, we all, the rest of the units pay to figure out how to fill that spot. And we should have in our agreement that if you can't supply the people you've committed to, you owe the pot money. I think that's fair. But we need to have that written up. We also need to think about, based on our experience, what are we contributing? And the expectation is, and that needs to be documented, what the expectation of people power we're contributing is. These are pieces of the agreement. If we're going to continue as an organization fully and entrenched in this, that we need to work out. And I think they are part of it. Part of our problem is that some of these points are it is about fairness and it is about equity. And we've got, you know, some of our members feeling that there is inequity. And the more we talk about it, the more we see where some of those holes are. So I think in fairness, David, it is a bit frustrating because, you know, we may have thought one way that this kind of meeting would be focused on understanding of the budget. But I think what is important is it helps everyone understand where the weaknesses are in the system that we have in place. And they do need to be addressed, not in this conversation around the budget, but they need to be addressed. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, thanks, Elspeth. I appreciate that. And I guess that's where I was not articulating myself well, but going that not saying they don't need to be addressed, but like tonight, if we keep adding new things, then we're never going to get through what is, you know, what's supposed to be a budget discussion. So I just frustrated with that. Yes, Chester.
Elspeth. Yeah, I think that you very, very well said what sort of we have been thinking. And it's difficult also for me. I'm a new member to this committee. I've only been to 2 meetings. So maybe it's hard to communicate all of the points in a meeting or two, but they all center around different facets of the same idea, is that value and fairness. You know, we all want that for ourselves, for those that contribute their tax dollars. And I think that each one of these topics that are frustrating you, Mayor Mitchell, I think they're all different facets of that same problem. And we haven't really had a chance, I think, in Remo, throughout the decades probably that it's been operating, to really sit down and talk about what's fair, what's right, and really examine the original agreement, because, you know, how it was planned out decades ago and how it actually worked when as Elspeth said, when there was an emergency, they were different things. And so now we have the benefit of that context and an opportunity, as we have, we're looking at adding to the budget and setting a new trajectory for this organization. This is an opportunity to really think philosophically about what it is that we want to do with this. So thank you for the forum for that. I'm not frustrated by this discussion. I'm encouraged, because this is an opportunity for us to really hash this out.
Thank you, Andre. Other comments, questions? It certainly is clear to me as chair that we need to have, governance needs to be, and the agreement need to be looked at. We need to make sure we work through these issues, just as it's important that we make sure we get the issues on the table. So that we can work through them, for sure. Jamie?
Just a quick question, I guess, based on what I'm hearing here tonight. Are we still supposed to go to our counselors for the early March and see if this, are we going to recommend option one or option two, or are we going back to a whole new discussion on governance and other things before we take that back to the table? Because quite frankly, after tonight, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to take back to my council, because we really haven't came to any kind of conclusion, and now we're bringing up new things, which I'm not saying isn't fair and aren't important, but if we're going to go back to governance and all these other things before we talk, I mean, that usually gets worked out before you talk about a budget, before you decide a plan. So I guess I'm asking, what direction are we supposed to do as councillors for the early March meetings? I think you wanted an answer by like March 12th.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair question. Yeah, Alex.
Yeah, I can certainly provide clarity to that. Councils don't need to come to a decision. If you have issues that you would like to raise about either option one or option two, as an individual council member, make sure you provide those to your rep. And if your council wants to discuss it as a group, absolutely add that to one of your agendas for a committee of the whole or council meeting, so that your representatives are well prepared for the next REMAC meeting. The next REMAC meeting is scheduled for March 12th. And that's the meeting where the advisory committee itself will make a decision about which budget you want to endorse. And then that will be the recommendation going to council. So to maybe try and put a little bit of a bow on these different comments, I've heard lots of good discussion about the need for additional municipal staff, maybe some more specificity needed in the agreement, some questions about governance. And I see those as worthwhile conversations to have. And because in my entire time, which is over 11 REMO budgets, I haven't seen split vote until last year. And there was one council which wasn't supportive of the budget. So I'm not too concerned that we don't have revised concept of governance in order to make a decision about this budget, because we've generally been operating in a way that provides emergency services in a way that's acceptable to our municipalities. The challenge before us is that we're trying to grow and adapt to new circumstances. But I think that either of the two options ahead of you would allow you to do that. And still, a REMAC can have those governance discussions over the course of the next year. So that you can look into, do we need to revise the agreement to set a minimum number of trained staff available and a minimum number of staff who are then respond each time we activate. Those are questions that we would want to discuss carefully rather than have them come up as a sidebar to a discussion about resources, because part of our model is based on allowing for that flexibility. So, you know, some of us have families with small children that personal example, I can't always respond for the first shift, but if it's a full activation, I will be available for a shift once I make sure that childcare is arranged. And that's baked into our model. So we can have the discussion about fairness and value for money and governance without trying to cram it all into this meeting.
I think that's a good plan. Penny.
Thank you. I hope I am not going to muddle things up or come across as totally muddled. But at the very beginning of the conversation, we talked about that currently two units control 51% of the budget. And it's proposed to change it so that three units control 51% of the budget. So how does that play out in terms of decision making at the table with five units with two representatives each? That's 10 votes. How can we be making a decision about the budget if we're still using the same formula?
Great question, Councillor Carver. So that formula applies only to the decision on approving the budget. The advisory committee functions on a simple majority in terms of trying to make their own decisions. But the formal approval of the budget for the regional emergency management organization is specified in the agreement that you have to have at least two units take it back to their councils and vote and approve it. And those two units have to total more than 51% of the budget. And so we were suggesting changing that number to say three, just to make sure that, for example, one unit doesn't work hard with another unit to just try and ram the budget through, even though three of the partners were opposed to it. But again, I think it might actually be the 12th time I've gone through a REMO budget. They've been unanimously supported up until last year when we had one unit not support the budget. So that's why we're having the question, but I don't think it's a make or break that we can't function as an organization without solving that question right away. And as you can tell by the meeting we're having tonight, we've already made strides in terms of making sure that at the very least every unit is well informed about what the budget information is and what the advisory committee is considering before they get that recommendation.
Thank you.
So Alex, just run through, so just so we're clear on the process, the next step is that at the REMAC meeting, we will make a recommendation to the councils on, let's call it option one or option two. You know, it's important that because everyone's here, we have a good representation from the five units here of councillors on and not on the committee, that you have that discussion as councils so that when your members come to the REMAC meeting, they have an understanding of where your council is sitting, so that we avoid the situation of last year where we perhaps have a disconnect between the board members and where council wants to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is some homework for people to do before the next REMAC meeting. I will say that no matter what we choose, there is going to be, quite a bit of work for us to do over the next 12 months, if hearing from multiple people, but wanting to dive into the various aspects of the agreement and governance and staff and all that. So I do want folks around the room to know that we're taking notes. We have heard those concerns. So there's no question there was value in having the meeting. But as it says on the slide there, have those discussions as your individual council units before the next REMAC meeting so that the REMAC members are prepared to articulate your council's wishes. Hey, are there any other questions? Okay, hearing none, I want to thank Alex again for his presentation and for being available to answer all the questions. And I want to thank everyone who asked questions. Appreciate that. And so if you have, if anything else comes up, just feel free to through your CAO to email those and they can get them to Alex and Angela for to get them answered between now and the March 12th REMAC meeting. So
David.
Yep.
It's very important to be, I'm basically just the messenger. I'm summarizing information to address a governance concern, and Angela is the one that has provided all of the emergency management expertise.
Of course, we thank Angela a lot for all that she does. Perfect. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay. If there's nothing else, we will adjourn and enjoy the rest of your week and hope that the ice melts a little bit faster.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you all. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.